across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast, and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for your good and thoughtful emails. Very many guest suggestions coming in. Also, some thoughts about the program. That's the whole idea of having the email facility there, so that you can contact me directly. You know that the difference between us and the big corporations is that quite often they have people employed to read emails, but you cannot guarantee at all, and I know this for a fact, that when you email a program or an organization, that the right person gets to see the email. At least you know with me, even though we're small, I will get to see your email, and I will get to do something about it. Thank you to Adam Cornwell, a creative hotspot in Liverpool, for devising the website, maintaining it, and getting the shows out to you. The website is www.theunexplained.tv. www.theunexplained.tv. I guess things have moved on with the internet now that you don't necessarily have to automatically say the www bit. I guess I'm old-fashioned. I've been doing it for years. Right. It's been a very busy period, this, and within the last few days, I've had to discharge a very sad and very poignant duty. My brother-in-law died about 3 weeks ago, very unexpectedly and very shockingly for us. His funeral was in Worcester last Friday, a place where I used to work on the radio and a place that has a significant slice of my heart. I lived in Malvern, up in the hills for a couple of years, so I was able to go back there and visit some old haunts. Now, my brother-in-law was a man of practicality. He was a banker. He dealt in hard facts and figures. But he was also a keen scanner of the skies. He had telescopes, used to look at solar flares. I wish I'd been able to talk with him about those, because I'm sure we could have had a great discussion. But I wanted to pass on one thing from him that I have a feeling he would want you to know. And this was his view that I only heard first at the funeral, that our body as human beings is just a spacesuit that we wear for the time that we're here. And then when it's time for us to move forward and move on, we discard it. I love that thought. And I have a feeling that somewhere he would want you to know that. Now, on this show, we like to get the big-name guests on. Of course, we do. We've had Edgar Mitchell and Uri Geller and Richard Hoagland, and you name the list of people, and, of course, Dr. Stephen Greer. Now, the Dr. Stephen Greer show probably was the biggest one that I've ever done. I had tens and tens and tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of downloads, which continue of that show. You seem to like it. And on the back of it, I was contacted by one of the groups doing his C-SETI work, carrying forward the torch of that, using his techniques. Now, these people are not experienced media users. In fact, it's going to be their first broadcast. They've never done anything like this before. And I just thought it would be nice to put some ordinary people on here trying to do some extraordinary work. So when they emailed me and they said, you might want to know about what we're doing here in Montreal, Canada, I thought for a moment and then I said, yeah, let's do it. But please, when you hear this, understand that these people are not trained or experienced users of the media. And I think often that's a good thing. Sometimes people who've been trained in using the media give you pat answers. And that's not necessarily always what you want when you're doing interviews, when you're talking with people. So in a moment, we're going to cross to Montreal, Canada, to talk to Claire and Nick at the C-SETI group there, a comparatively new group. But the pair of them have been practicing, if you want to call it contact, for quite a few years. Now, bear in mind again that they are not trained media people, but I think they might well be interesting. You tell me what you think. You can always drop me an email afterwards. And it will certainly be experience for them to come on here. And I think something different for us too. Thank you for your emails. Keep them coming. Please spread the word about this show and also keep your donations coming. They are vital too if we ever want to do something big with this show, which I feel we could. Let's cross now to Montreal, Canada, to Claire and Nick from the C-SETI group there. Claire and Nick, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
And I suppose since you're in Montreal, I should say bonjour, comment ça va?
Très bien, et vous?
Hey, that's the limit of my French, by the way. Okay, so you are a team. Are you the team? Are you the entirety of C-SETI in Montreal then?
We are the core members. We do train other people that look for training. At the moment, we are the only two core members, but we do have other people that are interested in being a part of it.
Claire, you're being very quiet. So let me ask you, do you consider yourselves to be a pair of happy amateurs, or are you scientific questers?
I would say that we're amateurs in the sense that our heart's in it. We want to help Dr. Stephen Greer. We have been doing the CE5 protocols. We know they work. And this is our intention, is to gather people and to offer training.
All right. Well, I've been looking at your videos on YouTube and other places. A lot of talk about this CE5 protocol. Explain to those who don't know what that is.
The CE5 protocol is a way for us to initiate bilateral mutual contact with ET civilizations. So it's like learning how to use the phone, so to speak. And it's a pretty big subject. And we actually just gave a briefing to a few people last weekend and, explained them how it works, how to use it, the details around it. And it took 10 hours. So it's certainly not something that you can pick up quickly, depending on who you are. Some people get it faster than others, but anybody can do it. And that's the really exciting part.
And this is not as whacked out and crazy as some people may be thinking, because there are very serious researchers who quite credibly claim that it is possible to initiate contact, that human beings, us, we don't necessarily have to be the passive recipients of this. We can actually make it happen for ourselves. There's a guy I spoke to in the north of Scotland earlier this year who's affiliated with a group called Amash, and he's in a part of Scotland where apparently you can summon craft and beings. And as crazy as that sounds, I was tending when I spoke to him to believe him.
Yeah, well, we don't really use the word summoning. But yeah, anybody can do this. When you understand the physics of consciousness and what that implies, just on your own little playing field as an individual, and you understand how that expands and how everybody is connected by some of these concepts that might be a little strange to people at first, you realize, holy cow, you could talk to anybody. And we can use this to communicate with the ETs that are visiting us. And it's really amazing things happen.
Well, listen, I spent a lot of time trying to get Dr. Stephen Greer to come on this show. Mm. And I was absolutely thrilled and delighted because he was every bit as good. And I know you heard the show, and that's why you got in touch with me from Canada. But he was every bit as good as I knew he would be. Yeah. But the direction that we went in with the conversation was exciting and unexpected. It was about consciousness, exactly what you've talked about. I thought he was just a man who would talk about metallic craft flying in from somewhere and stuff like that. I had no idea there was such a big dimension of consciousness to it. And that, to me, was something that it wasn't new to me. But to hear it talked about in that way by Dr. Greer was pretty exciting. So I can understand, how you might get hooked. The question for both of you, Claire, you're quiet again, is why did you get hooked on this? Why are you doing this?
Well, first of all, I didn't get hooked on it. No. I've been in contact or in communication with extraterrestrial beings since the age of, 12, 13 years of age.
How so?
Walking home from school and I'm looking up into the sky and there is a vessel.
Walking home That's from school?
It. Yeah.
And was it just randomly there? Was it shadowing you, do you think? What was the deal?
At that time, at the age of 13, 14, yeah, I'm just kind of looking up in the sky and saying, oh, okay, hello. Hi, how are you? And they're talking back to me.
This was in Montreal?
No, this was in Moncton, New Brunswick.
Okay, so you're out in the sticks a bit out there.
Yes, I was out in the sticks. But they've been with me. Now, you use the word shadowing. I don't think that would be the term that I would use. They were trying to show themselves to me. And since I was not afraid, I just said hello back. And they've been with me ever since.
You must have wondered a lot then since then. I don't know how old you are now, but it's a few years since you were 13, I guess. Why they would want to be, why they would be interested in you in New Brunswick, of all the places and all the people in all the world, why you and why there?
Well, I'll give you my age. I'm going to be 55 years of age.
Okay.
So I've been doing this for a long time. And I have a feeling that I was kind of destined to do this, a little bit like Dr. Greer, you know, at a young age. So I was kind of guided towards this work, and I had no fear.
And from that first contact, because we can call that contact, there was communication there, apparently.
Absolutely.
What happened?
Well, there's a lot of questions. Why me? What do I have to do with this? And they baby spoon fed me, in a sense. So, for example, I started getting communications. I started writing. It didn't make any sense to me. I needed answers. Then I had to go into a development class. I took a meditation class. I did transcendental meditation training. I was in India, so on and so forth.
But this began when you were 13. Just wind us back to the development of it when you were 13, because, well, I don't know, when I was 13, I used to like to watch the pop music programs on TV. I used to go and buy records. I was a bit into the shortwave radio, listening to Radio Canada International and all of that stuff back then in Liverpool. But if something like that had contacted me, and I did have my own small experience, but I was 17 then, but it wasn't much by your standards. Mm-hmm. But if I was 13 and something had contacted me like that, I'm not sure quite how I'd have reacted and who I'd have told.
Well, I didn't have much of a choice. You know, there was nobody around me that I could speak to. So I pretty well had, I kept it to myself. And like I said, I started writing and I had no fear. So I just rolled with it.
And you say you started writing. What, you started writing down things they told you?
Yes.
And what were they telling you?
Very much what Dr. Stephen Greer is talking about. It's only later on in 2001 that I saw him in Montreal. And I said, oh my goodness, I've been writing this for years.
Okay, but you haven't told me what they were telling you.
Oh boy.
Well, yeah, give me a snapshot. They must have told you something about who they were and who we are, maybe. I don't know. You tell me.
Wow. Okay, to put that in a nutshell.
An example.
Yeah. Very much, I would say, contact. How to contact them. How easy it is to contact them. Simply by thought form, to sit down and to close your eyes and say, I want to contact, I want to communicate. It's just as easy as that.
But as a 13-year-old kid, did they give you a sense of why you would want to contact them?
At the age of 13, I had no idea exactly where this was going, but like I said, I rolled with it. You know? I knew that there was something that was important. And here I am. But in between, I had to do a lot of work.
And what do you think they've done for you in your life from 13 to 55? What's that, 32, 42 years? What have they done for you?
What do you mean? In what sense?
Well, in what sense have they enhanced your life? Because you wouldn't have kept on contacting them if they hadn't done something for you. If you weren't getting something out of it, I presume. So what is it that they've given you?
What they've given me is, love. They've shown me kindness. They've helped me in a sense to continue my work, to assist Dr. Greer in any which way I could.
And what you talked about your work a couple of times, Claire. What do you consider your work to be?
Well, our work is a are you asking Claire personally or us as a team?
I don't mind. I mean, either of you can answer the questions. It's absolutely fine. But I'm just interested as to what this work might be.
Well, basically, our work is to interact with them, to communicate with them, and to learn from it. It's a learning experience for us as people here to know who's who's checking us out, who's out there, and who's here.
Okay.
So it's really it's an education.
All right, Nick. Well, let me just ask Claire one more question, and then Claire will give you a bit of a rest. Don't worry. What sense did you get at what stage of who they were and where they were from?
I would have to say that during my development classes, where I learned to meditate, this is where I really got the answers. From where they were from, I never really got a specific, hello, we are from, you know, Venus and so on and so forth. It's a very difficult question to answer.
Well, have a try, because I'm going to get flooded again by emails from people saying, this is just too nebulous and out there for us.
Right.
And
right,
I want to—I have to pin you down to something. You must have an understanding of that. Otherwise, you know, trust me, my inbox is going to burst. I mean, do you where now at 55 years of age,
yes,
you must have more of an idea of who they are and where they're from than you had at 13.
Oh, absolutely.
So at this stage of your life's journey, who do you think you've been in contact with?
I would, well, they always come to me and they sign the guardians.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's all you understand, I mean, I have to say, if it was me, I think I would be a little unnerved that I didn't know more. But perhaps this experience, as you've described it, Claire, is something that I can't understand, because clearly it enfolded you, age 13, and has continued to enfold you and carry you forward. So perhaps you don't need to know any more. What do you think?
I think that when we make contact and there's a communication that occurs, there's a lot of information that comes in. Now, many times we get the same question. What are their names? Where are they from? So on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And many times, even if they tell us where they're from, if they tell me, like the guardians, they told me they came from a 5.5 star configuration and they show it, I'm not any further ahead because I can't find it on a map, on a cosmic map.
Okay, so it's just too big for us to comprehend. So why do they want you to be involved in the whatever project they've got going? Have you ever questioned that one?
Want to take that, Nick?
Well, I think that they're willing to interact with people that aren't afraid, that can understand. And I think, you know, there is a degree of selectiveness. I don't think it's being chosen or anything like that. But imagine from their standpoint, if you have two people and you have a choice to communicate with one or the other, and you have one person who's thinking about maybe, you know, football or you know, movies or whatever, and the other person is going, hey, what's this conscious mind that I have? I think that they're going to, you know, make a choice. So I think when people get start to have communication and interactions that aren't necessarily initiated at first, I think it really has more to do with who we are and what our potential is and what we understand and what we're not afraid of and what we're willing to learn more about.
Okay, well, we've heard Claire's story, and I think it's important that we hear yours too. Were you 13 at school? What was the deal with you? What happened?
The first time I saw some very interesting lights in the sky, I was about 13 as well. And I mean, my jaw hit the floor. I didn't know what I was looking at, right? And I remember telling my mom the next morning, Mom, you won't believe what I saw. I saw these lights and these things. And, you know, my report cards are glazed over her eyes. So that was my first lesson in not talking about it too much. Yeah. And then when I was about 17, myself and another person, we were walking down the street one night near my home, and we saw this giant floating triangular thing that didn't have any lights. It didn't make any sound, and it wasn't quite see-through, but it was like the same color as the sky, and it was kind of hazy, like you know, when you turn on a car engine and when you get out of the car, there's heat coming off the hood. Mm-hmm. It kind of looked like that a little bit, and it just floated away. And I'm, you know, the next morning I talked about it with this person, and she was not having it. And I realized that, well, there's something wrong here because this is really happening. And you know, I'm okay with it, but this person seems to have a little bit of difficulty with it. So it gets quite personal after a certain point. Mm. I think some people are a little bit more ready than others.
When was this and where was this?
This was in Montreal. I'm about 28. So when I was 13, it was, that's about 15 years ago. Mm. When I was 17, about 10 years ago. Anyway, what happened after that? I obviously had questions. You know, I'm going, what the heck is going on? And eventually I found Stephen Greer, the Disclosure Project, and much more about what he was doing. And I realized that this guy's talking about making contact, initiating contact. I went, no way, is this real? And eventually I met Claire, and she trained me. And, you know, since then, I mean, amazing things have happened that, you know, are kind of hard to explain.
I mean, you two sound like kindred spirits, and you know, you are the group at the moment. What brought you together? How did you meet?
Well, I ordered some of Dr. Greer's books, and I started reading them, and I started trying to meditate because I had never done this prior to that. I mean, I was about 21 or 22 when I started doing this, and I had no experience with this. I didn't know what I was doing, and I realized this, and I went, you know, little things are starting to show up and fly around over my house, but I don't know what I'm doing. So I emailed CSETI, and I got in touch with somebody there who referred me to a liaison of theirs, who then in turn got me in touch with Claire. So it was really through CSETI how I met Claire.
There are other UFO groups in Canada, because I've had, you know, contact from some of them, and I really should have been doing more about the scene in Canada, because it's absolutely thriving. There's great interest in it all up there. I'm just interested why you didn't join one of those groups.
Well, CSETI doesn't deal with UFOs because, frankly, they're identified. And we're trying to communicate with the people that are inside of them. So the UFO subculture tends to deal with unidentified and the mystery more than the truth. And that's fine, but we like to go the other way. And that has to do more with other things. We're more focused on the contact work.
And I did get a few emails after Dr. Greer appeared on the show, quite a few emails, and a lot of people saying thank you for talking about this aspect of communication, which is not talked about as much as it ought to be. Are you aware of the work of Paul Hellyer, your former defense minister in Canada? He's 90 years of age now. I spoke to him on his birthday. And what do you make of him?
Well, we're aware of his testimony through the Disclosure Project, and that he's quite vocal about this, which is very good. I mean, when you have highly credible people talking about this, people start to go, wait a minute, what's going on? These aren't just a bunch of crazy people. These are people who have been and done what we perceive as highly credible and is. So when you have guys like him or astronauts or other people, it really shows a great deal of progress in our understanding and what we're ready for. So I think that Paul Hellyer being a part of Disclosure and giving us testimony on this has been really neat.
Kind of seems to me that Canada has three good things going for it. One, decent and open-minded people. That I know to be a fact. Two, big clear skies. You know, and three, lots of open spaces, lots of clear country. You know, mountains, places with fresh air, so you can view those big clear skies. You bring those three things together, and you might be getting somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, they help. Yeah, but definitely having clear sky and open country is helpful. If you're trying to do a C5, for example, you know, it's definitely much more relaxing than being on a bench at a bus stop, you know. But, you know, we have footage of these things coming in over the city. So, I mean, it's really about what we're ready for. And whatever we're ready for, I mean, they'll deliver. It's not, it's more about us than it's about them.
I've seen some of your footage on YouTube, some of the stuff that you sent links to, and it's very interesting stuff. You know, there are lights in the sky, daytime. You know, you have these big blue crystal skies there without any clouds. I love North American skies. You know, we don't get them here. I'm looking at the moment. I'm looking at an awful lot of cloud here. We had this Saharan dust problem over this last week or so. So the air's full of muck and murk at the moment up here. But you get these big clear skies. And your videos, a lot of those have those big clear skies, daytime, and bright things there. But one thing I noticed about a lot of these videos is what you're seeing is very indeterminate. And as some of the people who've commented on the videos have said, I mean, a lot of people have been fascinated by them, but some of them have said, well, these things can be pretty easily faked.
Yeah, you know, well, that's the type of scrutiny that we kind of have to face, and we have to accept that some people they're not going to jump on the bandwagon, and that's fine. We're not trying to convince anybody. We're just sharing what we have, and if people want to call it a hoax, I mean, there's only so much we can do about that. But I mean, from my perspective, I don't have time for that kind of crap. So I mean, people can say what they want, you know. This is happening and we're filming it. So,
hey, I love your honesty.
What we say is if you don't believe it, go out and try it yourself.
Okay. That's what I want to get into now. Claire, you were saying?
Yes. The egg shape. Mm-hmm. Did you see that video?
Yes, I did. It was quite big and fairly clear.
Very clear. we did a C5 in a place called Lac Édouard. And
where again?
This was in Lac Édouard. It's in the north.
Lac Édouard in English would be Lake Edward.
Ah, Lac Édouard. Yeah, oui. Yeah. D'accord. All right, so you did this at Lac Édouard.
Yes, and this is in the middle of the boondocks. I mean, there's nothing for hundreds of miles. When we did the CE5, we were using the Sea City tones that were broadcasting. They broadcasted back the tones. We physically heard the tones.
I mean, this is real Close Encounters of the Third Kind, is it? It's just like absolute. The movie. Mm-hmm.
So we're all in the room and go,
the fifth kind, actually.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, what happened then?
So when we heard the tones being played back to us, we all kind of looked at each other and said, did you hear that? Oh, yeah, I heard that. So we physically heard. Of course, we fly out the door and we look up into the skies and there's nothing. We don't see anything. So we had one guy that had a handheld camera. And I told him, well, you know, where did you hear the tones coming in? He says, well, over there. I said, well, okay, why don't you pan it over there? And that's what we did. But we physically didn't see anything that evening till we looked at the footage and there was those orbs or an egg.
So they were not visible in plain sight, the Mark I human eyeball, as they call it in the Navy. They weren't visible that way, but they were visible electronically.
Yeah. Right. And that's when we realized how close they were to us. If you look, they were at our hip. Right. That's pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. And so they are, a lot of people do these videos of orbs and a lot of these TV shows like to do this stuff. And you're not sure whether it's a grain on the image or whether it really is some kind of light. But you're sure that there were orb-like objects around you that you couldn't see.
Well, it's not an orb. If you look at pictures and videos of orbs and you look at our little egg-shaped object there, it's not an orb. But, you know, those types of things do happen when you're making contact. Orbs will show up.
And how many people were with you at Lac Édouard?
We were six people.
And you all experienced the same sensations, the five tones. It was like, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Or something like that, yeah.
No, it wasn't that. It was that's what they played back to us, and we all heard it. And
when you say you heard it, I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you hear it with your ears or in your head?
That's what we had to verify. And we heard it with our ears, our physical ears, not in our heads. Physical ears.
And what made you want to go to that location so remote rather than do it in the center of Montreal or on the top of Mount Royal or, you know, wherever?
Well, it's really about our comfort. You know, if we're not comfortable, if we're not in a calm place, you know, some people can make contact on the roof of a skyscraper. Some people need to go out into the woods, you know, so.
And it's also for their safety.
Yeah, that too.
And our safety. Because as soon as a ship comes in and it's tracked, well, you'll have F-18s coming up.
How do you know that?
Because we see them. It happens.
So there is a dialogue going on here that the powers that be on this earth know about.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
So it's a cat and mouse game, isn't it? It's a cat and mouse game. Between you and them, you contact whatever it is to be contacted, and as soon as the ships appear, our lot have ways of detecting them. If you can summon them, they can probably detect them, and off come the F-18 fighters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, I would say cat and mouse is, I guess, a way to look at it. But once again, we don't summon them. If they want to show up, they show up.
Are they aware of any threat to them from here?
I really doubt that we pose a threat to them.
So what do you think, and maybe somebody's told you, what do you think this dynamic is? You know, our military being aware and scrambling fighters, you say, F-18s appearing. What's that all about?
Well, I think that, you know, that gets more into the disclosure stuff. We focus more on contact, but I will touch on it a bit just to get into it a little. I think that when you consider that when you witness an extraterrestrial vehicle and you see it and you go, wow, well, I don't believe in magic, so how does that work? Mm. The answer to that question brings in an entirely new paradigm of what we understand as technology and science. And I think that that becomes a severe threat to what we know as the grid, so to speak, you know, coal and gas and all this stuff. So I think that there is an unfortunate, you know, it's like we're on a farm and there's a fence and they don't want anybody hopping over.
That's a very good analogy. That's very, you know, good.
It's part of our evolution and it's going to happen anyway. So, I mean, it's kind of an awkward process. When
you staked them out at Lake Edward, like it was. You staked them out at Lake Edward, like it was. What happened? How did that play out?
Well, I wasn't at Lake Edward because I only met Claire afterwards, but maybe she can share that with you.
Yeah. What did you want? I'm sorry.
I want to know what happened. What happened beyond the appearance of the egg-shaped objects? What was it about? What communication was there? How did it unfold?
Okay. I would have to say that we all had a different experience. For myself, each time that I have contact with the extraterrestrials or these beings, there's always a feeling of love, kindness.
Okay, so you came away with that.
I come away with that each time. And there's other times where I'll get information or I'll get thank you for continuing forming groups to do the CE5 protocols. Thank you for supporting Dr. Greer. You know, we get messages like that.
There were five other people there, and you say that everybody's experience was different. What sorts of experiences did they report to you?
Well, in the room, there's a couple of people that were touched on their back. There's another person that got touched on her temple. There's another one that had an override. They could actually see where the craft was. So we all had different experiences.
Okay. And you're sure in your own heart that this is not down to the dynamic of six people together, and we know that our minds have abilities that perhaps are not too well documented, and you put people together, sometimes they can make remarkable things happen. You're sure that that is nothing to do with the physical proximity of six people all thinking the same kind of thing?
What we train people is in what we call the physics of consciousness, and understanding the difference between not only what our imagination isn't, but, you know, also what it is. And when you understand this fundamentally, the thing that's interesting is if we are all sitting around thinking the same thing, we're literally creating that thought on this domain, if you will, this intellectual plane that exists. It's not, this is something that is real that we're coming to learn. And what we can do is we can use what we're interpreting as our imagination as like a phone call. So we know the difference because that's what we're working with. What's interesting is when you look at it like this, or we look at it like this, I should say. I shouldn't tell you what you guys look at. You guys can look at whatever you want. But if I am thinking of an orange. I am like, it's like I'm projecting that orange. It's like a projector. It's like a little movie in that sense. But when we step back and we realize that, hey, you know what? We have the potential to project things. That's when you start to understand the difference between your imagination, what is actually going on around you, and what your imagination really is. And it's a tool. And so, yeah, there is a degree of what I guess you can call a projection, if you will. It's like we're calling them, we're saying hello, and we're filming things, we're recording things, sounds. We have all kinds of things that start happening after this. So we have physical evidence, not just this misinterpreted conscious physics, but we also have this physical evidence to back up what's going on around us.
There used to be a TV series they used to repeat on the TV in the 70s when I was a kid called The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And if you ever saw it, I guess, Claire, you might have seen it with Robert Vaughn and yes. David McCallum. They were both agents, and I love that, obviously, being a kid. They had these communicator things that looked like a pen. And whenever they wanted to talk to base, Robert Vaughn would take out this silver pen, screw the top of it a bit and say, open channel D. And he would instantly be talking to the headquarters of U.N.C.L.E. What you seem to be doing by going to Lac Edouard and using these C5 protocols is opening channel D.
Absolutely. By having six people, we're what we would call thought sequencing. So we're all on the same page. So in a sense, that's exactly what we're doing. And the minute that we have the same thought sequencing, the extraterrestrials pick up on it.
Okay, so this is a collective thing. Listen, I believe that groups of people can do things. My emailers, some of the more skeptical ones, are probably poised to write their emails right now if they haven't sent me one already, saying this is just a bunch of people going away and deluding themselves.
Well, you know, people are free to interpret things the way they'd like. We can't convince anybody. We can't change anybody's mind, but we have to maintain our position that, look, if you don't believe us, don't take our word for it. You can go out and learn how to do it yourself. And if you're doing it with the right intentions, you will have results because these beings are waiting for us to figure this out.
Really? Okay. Well, that is a key difference between people who just claim stuff and people who want to achieve something. Yeah. Give me a snapshot of how, say I wanted to go and do it tonight. Look, I live near a big park. Say I wanted to go out into this park with, even in London, this park, you stand in the middle of it at night and there are clear skies there. Say I wanted to practice this tonight. How difficult would it be for me to do? What would I have to do?
Well, this is where the training gets personal because it really depends on the individual. Some people are going to get it right away and some people take a bit longer. You know, it really depends, you know, some people pick up a basketball and they're already hitting three-pointers. You know, it depends. That's a personal development. That's part of the training. So, for example, you, Howard, you're an open-minded guy. You might get it quite quickly. And before you know it, things are happening. And you're going, no way, which is exactly what happened to me.
Hey, but listen, I've been in places where I've thought some kind of contact is likely. You know, those big places in Africa with clear skies. I've even been out in the middle of that park in the middle of the night. I'm not actually sure whether you're supposed to be there, but I was there once. And I looked up at the traffic of planes from Heathrow Airport and a lot of stars and clear skies that night. And I said, okay, if there's anything there, you know, what could I, you know, I wouldn't be able to prove it. It wouldn't be any threat to you. Reveal yourself. And I have to tell you now, I did it with the clearest and cleanest of intentions. Yeah. Nothing happened.
Well, there's a lot of factors involved. It's not to say that, you know, that they're always going to show up. Most of the time they do. It really depends. You know, you could be, you might be in a state of mentality where you're saying, okay, I'm ready for this. But are you really? Are you really ready for this? What if a ship comes down and people walk out and they want to shake your hand? Then what are you going to do? And most people are going to crap themselves. So, you know, this is the thing.
They might. I would be fairly scared. There'd be some trepidation there. But I think I could handle it. I'm ready for it. But it just doesn't happen.
This is why we train people to make sure that they fully understand
to the best
of our capability to facilitate their understanding of this so that it will happen. And if it's not happening, then why? And what piece of the puzzle is missing? What piece of information does somebody need personally to understand how this dynamic works? And, you know, I mean, we can only do what we can. But, you know, when we have people, they get together and they understand and the intentions are in the right place. I mean, these things show up. I don't know what to tell you.
So it's the six people, Claire, it's the six people who went to Lake Edward and you did what you did. What did you do, first of all? Did you all, you know, log cabin or whatever it was? Did you stand there in a circle of six people chanting? How did this work?
Okay, to answer your question, you can go online and you can get the information on what are the CEFI protocols.
Well, just give me an idea of what they might be for people listening to this now who want to just get an idea of this.
Well, the first element is understanding the physics of consciousness, and the second is the unbounded mind and what that really means. And that's kind of your first baby step when you step back and go, oh my God, this is a real place. You can take that and expand your awareness into a state of what people will call cosmic awareness. And when you get to this state, you are unbounded and you are in a, you know, you have people who have funny dreams where they fly away and things like that. This is a place that you can get to. It's like learning how to drive a car. And so when we understand this, especially if you have a group of people that understand it, it's almost like we're amplifiers and we're boosting each other's signal in a way. So in groups, it's very powerful, especially with people who understand to certain degrees. So, you know, teaching that is a process. Facilitating that learning experience is a big process.
And why do the beings, the extraterrestrials, why do they want to communicate this way? Why don't they simply hijack CBC Radio 1, Montreal, and, you know, just, you know, the slogan for that radio station is Canada Lives Here. Well, why don't they just hijack it and say extraterrestrials live here? I'm being serious now. Why don't they do something more public? Why do they play games?
It's not a game. You have to understand that... you know, for them to come and hijack our radio stations, it's not necessarily appropriate, and it's kind of dangerous. You know, for them to come and interfere with our civilization, our learning process, and force us to accept things as opposed to learning them on our own time, it's an interference with our learning process. And in the long run, we don't learn certain things. So we're walking around with crutches, you know. We have to learn how to take care of ourselves, and we have to learn how to be mature on our own two feet. If not, we start all over again with all kinds of, you know, wars and xenophobia and all kinds of crap.
So what use is this contact? What are they telling us? Are they telling us that we are living bad and misdirected lives that are aimed towards money and self-aggrandizement? We have awful nuclear weapons. We're using dreadful nuclear power technology. And we've got an example of how bad that can go at Fukushima in Japan. Are they telling you this, or what are they telling you?
This is a part of it, yeah. Yeah. These are some of our problems.
Okay.
And we need to learn how to take care of that, because, you know, we belong to the planet. The planet doesn't belong to us. And it's not our place to blow it up, frankly, you know.
So when you get these messages from them, how do you pass them on to a skeptical world?
We just do. We just share them with the people who want to hear it. And if somebody wants to call us nuts, well, you know, we're kind of expecting it. So it's okay. Well, okay, it's expected.
And where are your researches headed then? To what end is all of this being done?
I think that to what end? I think to what priority? I think the priority is understanding universal oneness. You know, it's like Dr. Greer says, you know, world peace isn't going to cut it. We got to go to the next thing. I think that this is part of our introduction to a interstellar community. And I think that it's going to continue. And I think that there's going to be less and less skeptics as the days go by, because it's part of our growth. I mean, this is going to happen whether we like it or not. So I think that it's a big giant baby step for humanity.
But clearly, I don't know, let me not put words into your mouths, but you're not just going to places and doing the same stuff and getting the same results all the time. There must be some progress over time, isn't there?
Yeah, there is development. There is new things that happen. We do make progress. But, you know, once again, You know, like if they were to dump everything they knew on us in one shot, our melons would pop, you know? So we really got to take it one little sip at a time. And this is why I tell people, you know, you think you're ready, but, you know, when it starts happening, you really got to check your head. You really got to recheck what you think you know, because it's quite challenging, the things that happen. You really have to analyze what we perceive as certain concepts and philosophies that become our biggest limitations. We have to let go of the outcome a little bit. So, you know, we do get new things, but it's always one little step at a time.
All right. And well, talk to me about the most recent investigation stroke contact that you both done and what you got out of it and how you did it. So I know that's a lot to ask, but I want to unpick the most recent thing that you've done.
Well, I'll tell you, the most recent, oh my God, you know, sometimes things happen on a daily, weekly basis. It's kind of hard to keep track of it all, to be honest with you.
But those emailers, don't forget them, are going to say, well, they're copping out
here.
Yeah,
I know. So which one would you like to touch on?
Let's go to the golf course.
The golf course. Okay.
Okay, let's hear about the golf course.
Okay, so I have a golf course near my house that, you know, I sneak onto in the middle of the night to go out and meditate and make contact. I haven't gotten in trouble yet, so I keep doing it. Because we're not supposed to be there, but we don't bother anybody, so it's okay. And, you know, we had an experience where we started meditating in my home, which is just about 5 minutes from this golf course one night. And, you know, we're meditating and we're getting into a state and we're asking them to come. And we go outside and we sit in my backyard in these lawn chairs and nothing seems to happen. So we go, okay, well, we'll try it again later, because they don't always just show up like that. It's not like throwing a coin in a slot machine, you know? So we go back inside and we wait a bit and we do it again. We do the CE5 protocols again. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm a musician, so I have musical instruments in my house. My guitar starts to play, dling, just like that.
What, by itself?
All by itself. And I'm going, what the
heck? Oh, my God.
I'm like, Claire, did you hear that?
I said, oh, yeah.
And then it happened again. And so he said, okay, this must be a sign. I don't, you know, they don't, maybe they don't know all the Neil Young songs, but
they got our attention.
They got our attention. So we went out to the golf course. We walked out. And this is the bizarre thing, is that typically, and maybe typically is not the right word for something this abnormal for most people, but you know, most things that happen in a contact experience, you can't film or record. So I'll just share it. But when we got to the golf course, the entrance that we were using, it was like, you know, it was like, for lack of a better term, it was like there was this force field around it. And we got to the gate where we went in, and it was almost like
we were entering.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap, this is going to get real in a few seconds, so I better be ready for this. And it was actually kind of, be honest, it was a little intimidating. I was kind of like nervous. I was like, whoa, this, I can feel this.
We could feel
it's very strong. And I figured, you know what? I've been trying to find this stuff for 6-7 years. I finally met Claire. I'm finally training. You know, I'm going. I'm going to do this. So we went in and we brought our fold-out chairs with us and we sat down. And one of the first things that happened was that I felt this
ripple,
this bizarre, like liquid-like ripple from my head to my toe. The only way I can describe it, it was kind of funny, but it's bloop, it just threw my body. And I was like,
and you weren't just cold.
No, it was actually pretty warm out. And, it was heavy. Like I felt like my body was like rippling. It was just, you know, I'm going, Claire, what the heck's going on here? And she's like, oh, don't worry.
That's so easy for her to say.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So this is part of the learning process, right? And we had these clouds over the golf course that were all heading in one direction with the wind. And, you know, okay, they're clouds. And then this other cloud starts to show up, but it is crossing the path of where these other clouds are heading. And that was highly abnormal, because I don't know of any wind systems that cross clouds. And this particular cloud was kind of foamy looking. It didn't look like the other ones.
And it felt very different.
Yeah.
We could really feel a presence.
It was very different. And what happened after that was we decided to change spaces, change spots, and walk further into the golf course, just to, you know, get away from some of the lights from the houses. And as we folded up our chairs, I looked up and I saw the moon, And I thought, okay, it's the moon. Like, I haven't seen the moon before. And we walked for about literally maybe 15 seconds. And just intuitively, I looked up in the sky again and I saw the moon again. And this is all in a matter of a split second. So I'm trying to explain my thought process in this moment. But I realized that where the moon was when I first saw it and where the moon was when I second saw it, I mean, it takes 7-8 hours for that to happen.
So you have missing time.
I don't know if it's missing time. My opinion at this point is that it was not the moon.
Right. It's not missing time. It was not the moon.
So but of course, if a thing looks like the moon and is bright as the moon, then it may well be the moon.
It may well be the moon.
But it was a crescent moon.
But how does the moon do that?
Well, how does the moon do that unless you exactly. lost some time?
So these are the types of questions that we end up with.
And you were not... Were you under the influence of any substance of any kind?
No, I wasn't stoned, I wasn't drunk. I wasn't tripping any balls.
Thank you. Thank you for answering that question for me. Okay, then what happened?
And then it's like somebody, you know, this is the weird, really weird part, is it's like somebody flicked a switch, like on-off, on my brain. And I suddenly, in this moment, I didn't know where I was. I didn't know who, and it was just a split second, you know, click like that. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what I was doing there. I didn't recognize Claire. Mm. And she was looking at me like, hey, you all right, buddy? And I said, I think so. And obviously I was lying.
At that point in time, I realized he was in an altered state. I knew that what we're looking at was a ship. And I knew that there was communication that was happening.
But you were both seeing, even though one of you was in a slightly different state, were both seeing the same thing?
No. Okay. We didn't see the same thing at all.
And so this is the type of... this is the type of thing that happens when you're interacting with beings who have technologies that, you know, we don't really hold a match to.
Or if you're just hypnotizing yourself.
I really doubt that. I mean, I've had physical markings on my body. I don't know
really?
How you hypnotize that.
Well, tell me about them.
Well, you know, I was going through the doubt process, as I call it. Is this really happening? Am I really doing this? Or am I just, you know, losing my friggin' marbles here? You know, because of course, rationally, I want to make sure I'm not nuts. And so I asked for a confirmation. I said, you know, I want to know that you're really there. I don't want any BS here. And, you know, I was in the shower and I was, you know, drying myself off with a towel in the shower and my armpits and whatever. And I was standing next to, parallel to the mirror in my bathroom. And I noticed in the corner of my eye, there was something on my back. And when I turned my back to the mirror, I had a giant square that was turned on its point like a diamond. And next to it was a rectangle. These are perfectly 90 degree angles. And each one was checkerboarded like a chessboard. And it was pressed into my skin in a way that I don't know how. It was like the blood vessels were raised or something like that. And I showed it to my father. I showed it to my girlfriend. And they're going, what the hell is this? So, I mean, I don't know how you hypnotize something like that.
And you hadn't been lying on a tiled floor or anything like that?
Oh, no.
Okay. I don't know any tiles that do that. I certainly don't sleep on them.
Got to ask the question. Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, listen, you said something that I don't want to lose. You said that we went to the golf course and it's often not possible to record any of this stuff. Now, this is the theme that I get most emails from listeners about. They say, These people talk about this stuff. Isn't it convenient that most of it can't be recorded? Show us the money.
Okay, well, just hold on. I can let me answer that.
Sure.
Okay, that evening we didn't go out with camera, film, etc., etc.
Why not?
Okay, because first of all, that was not our mindset that evening. We did this. It was not planned. We did this just off the cuff in a meditation, and off we went. But if we are going to plan in doing a CE5, it's organized. Then we're going to have the CSETI tones. We're going to have the emitter. We're going to have a night camera. We're going to have recording. We're going to have all the ABCDs in place.
And what is the best documented stuff that you've got with all that gear?
Ourselves as a team, we have footage. We have footage of these things entering the atmosphere and flying around. We have footage of this. We have sound recordings. We're just one volunteer team amongst many. But if you check out some of the stuff that evidence that Dr. Greer has, if that's what somebody needs, he's got way more stuff than we do because he's been doing this for 20 years.
There's a book called Contact: Countdown to Transformation, and it's the Sea Study Experience from 1992 to 2009. Very interesting.
Have you had any feedback from Dr. Greer himself about your work?
We got an email from him recently, but I think we'd like to keep it private.
Well, no, it's not private. It's
yeah. All right. Go ahead.
No, it's just he appreciates anybody going out and doing the work. This is why he does this CFI training.
That's the message certainly that came across from my conversation with him very clearly, that he wants people to be doing this.
Yeah. The ambassadors to the universe. This is what he is doing. He's giving you the tools, he's giving you the means, and he's saying, please, go back home, form a team, go out and make contact. And that's what we're doing.
It's almost like these political party conferences where the politicians stand on the stage at the end of their conference and they say, go home and prepare for government.
Mm-hmm. But here we're saying, hey, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
Okay. Here is not saying, come back and see me and.
True knowledge comes from firsthand experience. So, if people go into the mindset where they're going to debunk this, well, then, yeah, you're not going to have contact because that's what you're projecting, frankly.
Do you want to take this research? Do you want to amalgamate maybe with some other groups in Canada, do something bigger, do one big mega experiment?
Hopefully, that's the point.
I think we'll take it where it goes. Mm-hmm.
You must be making plans, though.
Yeah.
Sort of. Well, just give me, if you don't want to tell me specifically what they are, just give me a sense of them anyway. Don't leave me hanging.
The sense right now, we're getting a lot of people that are interested in our training, so we're starting to put groups together. Now, what is interesting is that we've had a few people that come in and they wanted to debunk us. And they left our meeting with their lips around their ankles, sort of thing.
You mean, as we say here, their jaws dropped?
Yeah.
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 Okay. They became believers?
Well, not really, but something happened because when we do a meeting, we also do a test meditation, okay? And we did a meditation, and these couple of people received something that they could not explain.
And they were hoping to go there and say, these people are a bit flaky, and it's going to be dead easy to prove that they're flakes.
Exactly.
And you're saying that they went away with their tail between their legs, really?
In a sense, yeah.
Okay. I never asked you once, both of you, what in real life, in the real world, in Montreal, what do you do? You said, Nick, that you're a musician and,
I'm a bricklayer.
Okay. Hey, well, that's a great skill to have. That's a very, very good skill to have.
Thanks.
And Claire, what about you?
I'm a pediatric dental assistant.
Oh, okay. So you're both very down-to-earth occupations that you have.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know,
anybody can do this, is what we're trying to tell people. It's not exclusive. And if
we can do it, everybody else can do it.
Anybody can literally do this if you take the time to truly understand.
And it comes from the heart.
Yeah, and if it comes from the heart, if you really get it, it's going to happen.
I had to ask you that question because there will be people who will get onto me if I don't ask you.
You could easily have
answered it. Not that there's anything wrong with this, but you could easily have answered that question with, we live on a commune. Yeah. But clearly you've got your feet on the ground and you're making a living like the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the things where we have to be a little brave because we know that people are going to just try to chop us up into little pieces. But all we can do is tell the truth and share who we are and what we're experiencing. And however people want to react to that, the ball's in their court.
But our emphasis is go out and do it. We're giving you the tools. We're giving you the means. You have all Dr. Greer's material, videos, et cetera, et cetera. Go out and do it.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you both when you emailed me, because I talked to Dr. Greer and was very, very impressed with him. And let me tell you, that show had more response than even Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, and that nearly crashed my website. You know, it had enormous amounts of 100,000 downloads in one weekend. You know, that was the most amazing experience for me. But I wanted to hear from somebody practically using those techniques and doing this stuff on the ground, which is what you're all about. So I'm glad that we've done this. If people want to see your videos, understand a bit more about you, where do they go? What do they do?
If you want to see the videos, you can go on YouTube and just type in Montreal CSETI team and CE5 working group, and we have a few videos up there. If you want to know more about training and how it actually works, you'll have to get in touch with us, and we can take it from there. And I mean, obviously, we can't. You know, we don't have the resources to fly out and train people. No. So,
how do we get in touch with you? Do we have to think at you? Or what's the way we do that?
Sometimes. If you want to email us, for example, you can get in touch with us at montrealcseti@gmail.com.
Dr. Greer has an app?
Dr. Greer has an app that just came out. It's called the www.etcontactnetwork.com, where you can connect with other people who are doing this and learning how to do this. And we've actually already, it just went up a couple of days ago. We're already getting emails from people.
All right. Well, just give me the comprehensive answer now, without using any profanities, if you can manage it, because we'd have to cut them out. But I will get the emails from the people saying, what the hell are you putting a couple of flakes on like that for? Just give me, you don't have to defend yourselves, but just tell me calmly what you would tell them.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
No, I
get emails from people saying, what are you putting a pair like that on there for? It's so out there, it's not true.
Well, how would we respond to people calling us flakes?
Yeah, to people implying that you were, because they will, and they do.
Well,
you know that.
Of course they will. I mean, it happens every day. But, you know, all we can say is, you know, we can't convince anybody. If people want to debunk, they're going to debunk. But if you really want to know that this is real, you got to go out and do it. We can't give you this experience. You have to want it. You have to do it. And, you know, these beings are not going to communicate with people who are in this mindset of, just narrow, frankly. So, I mean, that's what it is. And, I can understand that people would perceive us as flaky or nuts, and I don't blame them, because when I first heard about this stuff, that's what I thought. But I figured, if it's real, I want to know. I want to know the difference. I want to know what I'm dealing with here. And believe you me, I learned some things. So that's all we can really say, I think.
And Claire, last question really for both of you, because we're out of time. Why did you get in touch with me?
Well,
I guess we just wanted to share the videos.
The videos, yeah. Well, we just wanted to, as they say in French, we wanted to appuyer Dr. Greer. We wanted to support Dr. Greer. Mm-hmm. To let you know that this guy is for real, and what he's talking about, the CE5 protocols, they actually do work, and he's telling the truth.
And they're not just doing it down in the high desert or down in Florida. They're doing it up in Canada.
They're doing it all over the world.
There's teams all over the world.
All right, Claire and Nick, listen, thank you very much indeed. And just remind me of the name of the group. It's Montreal CSETI, yeah?
Montreal CSETI team and CE5 working group.
All right, well, listen, stay in touch both. And if anything remarkable, anything even more remarkable happens, then let me know, will you?
We will.
For sure.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Claire and Nick from the Montreal branch of CSETI, and I'll put a link to their work on my website, www.theunexplained.tv, the website designed and created by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. That is the place to go if you'd like to make a donation to the show, very gratefully received and very important, or you'd like to send me a guest suggestion or some feedback about the show, www.theunexplained.tv. Some very good guests in the pipeline. I've got a lot of good shows coming up, including some names that you will be familiar with, and one or two that you're not. The next show should be with somebody who you suggested, but more about that at the beginning of the next show. I'm still making arrangements about that. Until we meet again here on The Unexplained, thank you very much for your support. Stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. I'm in London. And until we meet again, take care. Bye-bye.